Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, November 16th, 2017. The head of the UN mission in South Sudan is praising President Kiir for resolving the standoff with Paul Malong.
That conclusion came down simply to the choice of putting South Sudan and the stability in Juba beyond and before all other concerns. And we're grateful for the statesmanlike way in which the situation was finally resolved.
And the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations has strong words for President Kiir.
I have been to refugee camps before, for Syrian refugees in both Jordan and Turkey. But the South Sudanese refugees live in conditions that make the camps in Jordan and Turkey look like luxury resorts.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A top UN official is praising President the Kiir administration for peacefully resolving its recent week-long standoff with former Chief of Staff Paul Malong. The government recently withdrew tanks and dozens of soldiers deployed near Malong's residence after he refused to release a platoon of soldiers guarding him. The head of the United Nations mission in South Sudan says the withdrawal of troops has calmed tensions in Juba. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
UN Special Representative David Seara told a news conference at the UN base in Juba today it is important for South Sudanese to resolve their conflicts internally.
That conclusion came down simply to the choice of putting South Sudan and the stability in Juba beyond and before all other concerns. And we're grateful for the statesmanlike way in which the situation was finally resolved.
Seara says he hopes the Security Council will renew the mandate for the UN mission in South Sudan, which is due to expire in a month. A review team is scheduled to arrive in Juba from UN headquarters in New York at the end of the month. Seara says the team will look at the security situation in South Sudan and consult with a number of people, including officials from the government and aid agencies.
The strategic review team will then report back to the UN Secretary General, who in turn reports to the Security Council. And its findings will help inform the decision of the Security Council on the renewal of the mandate, the UNMISS mandate.
If the review team determines that the security situation in South Sudan has improved, Seara says the UN will help facilitate the voluntary safe return of more than 200,000 internally displaced persons or IDPs sheltering in six UN camps across the country.
That number has fluctuated depending on the security situation, but the trend is now showing a gradual decline, albeit slow decline. And overwhelmingly, and certainly in my experience talking to people in these sites, as I've done on many occasions, they are keen to return home and restart their lives. But in many cases, we are still far from conditions for them to do that. However, a number of joint initiatives are underway in Benchu, in Wau, Malut and Bor to create safe environments so people can return home if they choose to.
Seara says that will only happen after the UN makes sure there are services available to the returning IDPs. The UN Special Representative also welcomed President Salva Kiir's decree this week ordering security forces and local leaders to allow aid agencies and workers unfettered access to more than 6 million people in need of assistance across the country.
As usual, we will continue to monitor the progress of that access. The fact that it comes from the top means that we anticipate and we expect others, you know, along right down the chain to follow that order.
Seara also noted that it is the government's responsibility to protect civilians, not the UN's. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
A panel discussion on South Sudan brought the images and stories of South Sudan's conflict to the U.S. Capitol last night. As Ayen Biol reports, a senior U.S. diplomat reminded her audience that the Trump administration's position on South Sudan revolves around holding South Sudanese leaders accountable for crimes committed against civilians.
South Sudan is entering its fourth year of violence next month, and the United States' top diplomat at the UN says she is working to hold top leaders accountable. Speaking to a packed room last night at the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington about her recent trip to South Sudan, UN Ambassador Nikki Haley vowed not to look away from the violence perpetrated by both government soldiers and rebel forces on civilians.
The unspeakable violence that is occurring is not random. It is calculated, and it is directed at innocent civilians. It is designed to convince women of their powerlessness, and it is designed to separate young boys from their parents and turn them into cold, remorseless killers.
Ambassador Haley says she was not prepared for the level of suffering she saw up close in South Sudan, but will remain focused on bringing an end to the conflict. She recalled horrific stories told to her by South Sudanese refugees and internally displaced women she met at camps she visited.
The government is engaged in a brutal, protracted military campaign against a fragmented opposition. The divisions are tribal. Both sides are responsible for atrocities against civilians. But the government is primarily responsible for ethnically based killings and for deliberately blocking the delivery of humanitarian assistance to suffering people.
Millions of South Sudanese are food insecure, while UN aid agencies have said that funding shortages have made it difficult to assist millions of refugees and IDPs. Haley says she was shocked by the suffering she saw among the South Sudanese people.
I was not prepared for the level of suffering that I saw. Nothing prepares you for it. I had been to refugee camps before for Syrian refugees in both Jordan and Turkey. But the South Sudanese refugees live in conditions that make the camps in Jordan and Turkey look like luxury resorts.
Earlier this week, South Sudan President Salva Kiir promised free and unfettered access to humanitarian workers delivering aid in the country. Haley welcomed the announcement, but warned last night the South Sudanese president would be judged by his actions, not his words. And time is short to demonstrate real change on the ground. Ayen Bior for VOA News, Washington.
Police in the Jonglei state capital Bor say two people were killed and scores of others injured when gunmen ambushed a passenger vehicle traveling from Bor to Juba earlier today. Deng Gai Deng has this report for VOA from Bor.
Police say a vehicle carrying 12 passengers was attacked about 20 kilometers from Bor town. Speaking in Dinka, eyewitness Kura Kwei says two men died on the spot when unknown gunmen opened fire shortly after the passenger vehicle passed Malinthor village on the Juba Vo road.
When we were about to reach Bangachoro, we saw motorbike riders coming in high speed, and we did not know what was happening. While these gunmen were shooting at the motorbike rider, the rider bypassed us and we became now the next target. They shot at us, and this is how they killed two people among us. The bus stopped, and we ran into the bush.
Jonglei State Acting Police Commissioner Brigadier General Johnson Thon Reng says one of the passengers who was killed was a government soldier.
Car traveling from Bor to Juba was attacked by a known criminal between Bangachoro and Malinthor, after which one SPLA officer, Lieutenant Colonel, in rank, another person were killed. Three other people have been reported wounded.
Bor State Hospital Director Guy Abraham Kon confirms two wounded passengers are being treated for gunshot wounds at his facility. Akwe says four passengers who ran into the bush are still missing. He says the attackers stole everything in the vehicle, including computers. Brigadier General Reng says he has dispatched police to the area to search for the attackers.
We are not happy because our mission is to protect life and the properties of the people. It is our mission also to find out who are those people who was responsible for that making.
Jongkut Yu Jongkut, a spokesperson for Jonglei Institute for Peace, Democracy and Development, has condemned the incident and called on the national government to provide military escorts for travelers between Juba and Bor.
We are urging the government to provide highway escort, a military escort to Juba and from Juba to Bor, in order to stop these criminal activities between the highway, because this is the road that linking the city with Bor.
It's not the first time gunmen have killed travelers along Juba-Bor Road. In May, more than 30 people were killed while traveling from Juba to Bor. And in June, a convoy headed to Bor ahead of a visit by First Vice President Tavan Dengai was attacked by unknown gunmen. In July, two more people were also killed along the same route. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
The chairman of the Board of Trustees for the Red Army Foundation, Deng Bol Roy, says the Red Army is not happy with the way President Kiir is handling the affairs of South Sudan. Bol says the Red Army was promised that they will be leaders of tomorrow after the 21 years of fighting in what was then Sudan. He says he's yet to see those promises materialized.
The Red Army that we know today are veterans of the SPLM-SPLA liberation struggle. These were young children who found themselves in many military camps, in refugee camps and IDP camps during the war, at any time between 1983 to 2005.
How do you feel about what is happening in the country right now?
Well, it's unfortunate that things are happening like this, because the Red Army sacrificed a lot. And like I said, with many battalions of the Red Army, that means we were engaged in a lot of battles. And by the 1990s, all the children, those who were 6, 7 years and 8 years, were now adults and were able to fight. Between 1991 up to 2005, without the Red Army, the SPLA would have collapsed, because those who started the SPLA had aged, had also been wounded or dead. So young children had to take over. So when we see what is happening right now, while majority of us who were young people during the liberation struggle are now in our 40s, and we see that the country that we fought for and won is not peaceful, it's heartbreaking. And it is something that we really don't like seeing. And we, the Red Army, are very patriotic people. We love every South Sudanese. We are not tribal people. And we are visionary people, because we were promised that you, the Red Army, that Dr. John Garang said that we, Jesh Aswad, or older people, will destroy this corrupt, oppressive system of the Sudan. And then you, the Red Army, will build. So we thought that our mandate is to perform nation building for South Sudan. But right now, we don't even have a chance to build this nation, because the nation is at war, and our politicians and greedy leaders have eaten into the Red Army by dividing the Red Army among themselves based on tribes and regions and other things. So we are not happy. This is not the South Sudan that we were fighting for, and this is not the South Sudan that we want to build as Red Army, because our work, the reason why we were gathered from all villages in South Sudan, educated, nurtured, protected, and trained with the political and military ideology, is so that we are prepared to learn. That's why we came to Kenya. That's why majority of us went to the United States. There are about 5,000 Red Army members who are now in the United States. Majority of them, 75% of them, have already acquired college degrees. As we speak, there are over 100 Red Army members who have PhDs.
What is the foundation doing to ensure that you have your members at key institutions in South Sudan so that you could achieve your dream of building the nation?
Exactly. What we are doing right now, when we started 5 years ago, we've been promoting what we call patriotism and peaceful coexistence. And we wanted people to go back to being South Sudanese like we were during the liberation struggle. We were united people. We have had lots of programs that we've done, and that is to preserve the legacy of the SPLM, SPLA, so that it's not forgotten. And this is why every year on the SPLA day, which is the 16th of May, we perform some patriotic activities where sometime we mobilize some funds and then carry out some activities that are beneficial to the public and all this. And we celebrate also Independence, the Red Army Day, Veterans Day, to commemorate the 1955 revolt.
That was Deng Bol Arwai, the chairman of Board of Trustees for the Red Army Foundation. He was speaking with me in Kigali this week at a meeting of the South Sudan Young Leaders Forum. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese living in Uganda weigh on what needs to happen at the national dialogue. More on that when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how much influence do your parents have on your decisions?
My parents had an influence on me before they passed away, especially my late dad. He inspired me to be the first in everything. At that time, I was in primary school.
In a case when I need to take any decision, I first consult my parents in order to give me a way out on how I should make a good decision. So they always contribute a lot in everything that I'm doing in my life.
I think they have a large influence on the decisions that I make because, well, I have to ask for permission for stuff to do, like if I want to go out, you know, stuff like that.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Some 200 South Sudanese who attended national dialogue consultations in the Ugandan capital Kampala today say both President Salva Kiir and former first vice president Riek Machar must give up their political ambitions if genuine and lasting peace is to prevail in South Sudan. For VOA News, Simon Peter Apiku has more from Kampala.
South Sudanese say there is no place for President Kiir or Machar in South Sudan's future during national dialogue consultations in Kampala, which are aimed at looking at the root causes of the conflict and coming up with lasting solutions. Participants say weak government institutions, tribalism, corruption, and unprofessional security organizations have all contributed to the conflict. South Sudanese Luka Lual says President Kiir and Machar are not serious about peace.
If both President Kiir and Machar do not want to come back on the table, these two men, they're supposed to go out for the power.
Jackson Michael, another participant at the National Dialogue Consultations, agrees.
Salva Kiir and his opponent should step down and give chance. They have benefited a lot. These are people, when they die, thousands of years, their children will not even suffer.
Termanyang says rampant corruption, coupled with the government's failure to strengthen its institutions, including the criminal justice system, lies at the heart of South Sudan's problems.
The government institutions are weak, and they don't, you know, because of this weakness, people take advantage of them, and they do whatever they want. Because they know in the end they will not be caught. And that's why many people have gone unpunished, despite the fact that they looted the country.
Tribalism, says dialogue participant Samuel Maker, has also helped fuel injustice, leading to conflict.
About tribalism and nepotism, people employ themselves in the government sector, not because of qualifications. We have very many youth who have completed in Uganda, in Kenya, and elsewhere, who are on the street, but primary aid leavers are in offices in Juba. And you think we will not fight?
Mary Michael, who also took part in the meeting, says in Arabic that corruption and the exploitation of people by a few political elites breeds anger and leads to conflict.
I may come from Unity, an oil-rich state where all the revenues from the oil go somewhere, and I do not get even 1%. I will definitely take up arms and fight.
Reverend Joseph Simbe, also speaking in Arabic, argues South Sudanese must abandon their pride and belief that certain groups are superior to others.
There is no one like us. I know everything. We know everything. This is what put this country in the mess it is in right now.
Lodiong Morris blames the military, saying the behavior of soldiers has seriously damaged relations with the civilian population.
I came from Kadukeji last week. They destroyed. The government soldiers came. Instead of fighting IO, they destroyed the whole village, burning people, destroying their crops. Honestly, the president in Juba is saying national dialogue. The army are doing the opposite.
Yak Abenigo says he believes the delegation from the National Dialogues Subcommittee on Refugees and International Outreach should not have come to Kampala at all because the problem lies in Juba and spread from there to other parts of the country which were previously peaceful.
It is between us, Vialam, and it is between the leaders. It is you, the leaders, to sit down and reconcile yourselves, and then we will follow you. But you cannot come to us and say you want to come to us. We don't know the problem. The problem will start in Juba, and then you people, you take it to Upper Nile, and you plant it there, and you destroy the whole Upper Nile.
As promised by the National Dialogues Committee, the discussions in Kampala were completely open. Dozens of participants spoke freely and many expressed their views on the root causes of the conflict in their country, as well as suggest solutions. For VOA News, I'm Simon Peter Piku in Kampala.
From Kampala, we go to Harare, where tensions mounted in Zimbabwe today as South African leaders met behind closed doors in Harare and Botswana's capital to try to defuse the situation following Tuesday's military takeover. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Hopes of a speedy and smooth resolution in Zimbabwe appeared to fade Thursday, as civil society and religious groups urged Robert Mugabe to quickly step down after 37 years in power. But he appeared to resist, and South Africa's president then dashed hopes of a quick final act, telling his parliament that it is too early to take any firm decision now. Mugabe hasn't been seen in public since being placed under house arrest by soldiers Tuesday night. Mediators sent by the South African government met at Mugabe's home Thursday and at State House. Analyst Knox Chitio of the Chatham House think tank, who is Zimbabwean, was in Harare when the military brought out its tanks Tuesday night. He says the longer the military is perceived to be in charge, the more unstable things will become.
The key issue is the time scale. The military will want these negotiations to be completed as quickly as possible. They want to have the president, or if it's acting president, in place as soon as possible. They want an interim administration announced, I think, as soon as possible. The military do not want this to drag out, because the longer all this drags out, the murkier, the messier it could become.
Some key figures in Zimbabwe's opposition are proposing a transitional government ahead of the elections already planned for next year. Opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai on Thursday urged Mr. Mugabe to resign.
Mr. Robert Mugabe must resign. Step down immediately in line with the national sentiment and expectation, taking full regard of his legacy and the contribution to Zimbabwe, pre and post Zimbabwe.
The vice president Mugabe recently fired, arguably the catalyst for this military takeover, has kept a low profile. Emerson Mnangagwa, says Piers Pigou of the International Crisis Group, will lose credibility if he appears too close to the military.
It is absolutely critical for the new incumbents to be able to, I suppose, distance themselves as quickly as possible from the illegal actions of the armed forces here, or ostensibly what looks like the... I simply don't know how they're going to put lipstick on that pig.
But Chitio says the negotiators have a lot to discuss. The crisis came out of a long-running, bitter rift in the ruling ZANU-PF party, which Mugabe has led for decades. Observers saw the move to fire Mnangagwa as a step toward the installation of Mugabe's wife, Grace Mugabe, as vice president. That would have put the unpopular first lady next in line, behind her 93-year-old husband.
It's very delicate. There's also negotiations within the party, between the party and the opposition, between the powers that be currently and South Africa. So there's a lot of multiple negotiations, delicate negotiations. Too much talk too soon could do more harm than good, I think is what the military are saying.
The military insists this is not a coup, and the powerful War Veterans Association called the action a bloodless correction. For that narrative to work, they need one thing that no one ever thought would be easy to get: for Zimbabwe's fiery, passionate leader to leave without a fight. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
And John, we have this breaking news at this hour. President Kiir and former Army Chief of Staff Paul Malong reconciled today at a prayer service. It was held at the president's residence in Juba. There are pictures that appear on social media this past hour showing Malong hugging Mr. Kiir. Meanwhile, UNMISS Chief David Shearer is praising the Kiir administration for peacefully resolving the week-long standoff with Malong outside the former Army Chief of Staff's home in Juba this past week. Government tanks and dozens of soldiers were withdrawn on Saturday after Malong agreed to release a platoon of soldiers that were guarding him. Shearer says the move calmed tensions, and he says it's important for South Sudanese to resolve their conflicts internally. Shearer says he hopes the Security Council will renew the mandate for the UN mission in South Sudan, which is due to expire about a month from now. A review team is expected to arrive in Juba from New York in 2 weeks' time. Shearer says the team will look at the security situation and consult with officials from the government and aid agencies. They'll also meet with members of the opposition in Addis Ababa. U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Nikki Haley told an audience at the American Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. here last night that top leaders in South Sudan will be held accountable for crimes committed against civilians. As the country is about to enter its fourth year of conflict, Haley told a packed room at the museum that, quote, the unspeakable violence that is occurring is not random, it is calculated, and it is directed at innocent civilians. It is designed to convince women of their powerlessness, and it is designed to separate young boys from their parents and turn them into cold, remorseless killers. Ambassador Haley says she was not prepared for the level of suffering she saw up close in South Sudan recently, but says she will stay focused on bringing an end to the conflict. She recalled horrific stories told to her by South Sudanese refugees and internally displaced women she met with at camps. And finally, police in the Jonglei State Capital Bor say two people were killed and scores of others injured when gunmen ambushed a passenger vehicle traveling from Bor to Juba earlier today. And that's a look at today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
We now leave you with the song Waka Waka by Shakira and Freshly Ground of South Africa.
Choosing your battles, pick yourself up and dust yourself off and back in the saddle. You're on the front line, everyone's watching. You know it's serious, we're getting closer, this isn't over. The pressure's on, you feel it, but you got it all, believe it. When you fold it up, oh, oh, and if you fold it up, eh, eh. Tamina, mina, sangalewa, cause this is Africa. Tamina, mina, eh, eh. Time for Africa.
We've been listening to Shakira and the Freshly Ground of South Africa with the song Waka Waka. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
If for Africa. Samina.